The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 910. It's the 30th of October, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom. That's B-O-O-M, ticker. And Rob discusses the appointment of Ollie Walters as head of UK sales and gives a general business update too. Also on the podcast, Dennis Thomas, CEO, and Richard Wilkins, CFO of Phoenix Global Mining. That's PGM, ticker. And they discuss the recent drill results at the Empire Mine and the addition of two highly prospective copper cobalt properties in the Idaho Copper Belt. Also on the podcast, market analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about companies releasing updates this week, including Ryanair, Next, and Apple. And as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, and there's a joint five, which means there's six companies. Exciting, eh?
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Rob Proctor, CEO of Audioboom. That's B-O-O-M, ticker. Rob, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. And it's been a while since we chatted, and you've had some significant news out. But I like to do this, Rob, as always, because there's new investors, people join the podcast all the time. But if there's someone out there who doesn't know what you do at Audioboom, what do you do? Explain to them. How do you make your money?
So we're basically a podcasting and on-demand audio platform. So you can create, upload, store, and then distribute to, you know, obviously onto Audioboom itself. You can push to Facebook and Twitter, push it to iTunes. We're now Spotify's preferred partner for getting podcasts onto Spotify. So if you want a podcast on Spotify and you go to them, they'll push you towards us to platform it. We're Google Play's any global content partner. And obviously recently signed that deal with Deezer as well, so we distribute into Deezer, and we're going to be doing some interesting stuff for them in France and Germany coming up over the next few quarters as well.
Yeah, and for people not aware of the story, I suppose this year has been quite a significant year because, of course, you know, you're still sort of quite newish, and I suppose this industry is quite new, but your revenue is increasing, quite a few fold, and you've got a sort of target in the market this year for 5.4 million, I think it is. How is sales going, Rob?
Yeah, sales are great. I mean, obviously, the US is, you know, still leads the way for us and for podcasting as an industry generally in terms of commercialization. But here in the UK, we can definitely see, you know, really, really great growth strides being made, especially over the last couple of quarters, as UK agencies finally wake up and realize, one, there's a massive audience on podcasting now, but also the quality of the advertising and the engagement is actually way, way better than pretty much any other form of digital advertising. So, yeah, it's coming well, and obviously we've just brought Ollie on, you know, a couple of weeks ago now, but obviously the announcement went out a couple of days ago. So Ollie joined us as head of UK and rest of world sales, based here in London. We were fortunate enough to lure him away from the Bauer Group, which is great. So it comes with just a ton of media agency contacts, but actually a ton of direct-to-brand contacts as well. So Ollie's going to be building out, you know, the UK-specific sales team now under himself, exactly as he wants to build that. So, yeah, great things in 2018 from Ollie and out of the UK and several other markets outside of the US. I mean, the US is absolutely our focus. You know, 80-90% of everything we do is US-based. Our New York office is killing it right now, doing a tremendous job where we're growing faster than pretty much any other podcast company in the US. So we're catching up and to the big players out there. We're outstripping a lot of the other guys, which is super encouraging, you know, given, you know, I mean, you've probably seen it. We've had I know just over $100 million invested into the podcast industry in the US through five or six different companies just in the last couple of months. So you know when VC money comes into an industry, you know that it's getting hot, that's for sure.
So I guess
for me, we were a couple of years earlier than the rest of the industry. And, you know, you pay the price for being the first in the market, but hopefully you reap the benefits because you've sealed off a lot of the market downstream. And we certainly feel like that here in the UK. We are, you know, we're a dominant player in the UK. We've got best practice. We know what we're doing. We've got a repeatable model. So as we look to build out the UK, but also look at France, Germany, and into Scandinavia as well, where, you know, we've got great content partners already, but look to put commercial operations in place, I think we're in a good position. Yeah, great.
Yeah, and do you know what? I mean, I think it says a lot that you've got Ollie here from traditionally a radio background, you know, he's worked for many of the big players there, coming into podcasting industry, and that's the way the industry is moving, isn't it? A lot of it is coming into podcasting, but also, I suppose, it was very positive, but are you finding, Rob, as now, you know, everyone is switching on to podcasting, it's becoming a more competitive space?
Oh, it's definitely getting more competitive without any doubt at all. But, you know, I think the key for me and in that competitive, and this seems kind of a bit tangential, but actually, ultimately, the winners in this space are going to be the ones that have got great content, for sure. But also, and importantly, the media agencies, the ones that have got best practice around measurement, audience measurement, metrics, and campaign performance. And again, we've got 3 or 4 years experience of knowing exactly how and what to measure in the right way and how to present that to the media agencies. And obviously my background is all in digital advertising, so again, I know the way that data needs to be presented in a way that they want to buy it. You know, we see a lot of our competitors in this space, you know, and, you know, they're not listed companies, so, you know, they can make up figures as much as they want. And, you know, we know they do, frankly, because we know what the real numbers are, and we report real, accurate, transparent metrics, not only to the city, but we can then use those when we go into the media agencies. Mm-hmm. So it means the media agencies are buying with confidence because they know that the listening numbers haven't been gained. And that's vitally important for us as we build out and build credibility for the industry with the media agency markets.
Yeah, yeah. And going forward, how are developments there? I mean, your own productions, how are they doing? And is there anything else that's exciting you that's happening at the moment?
Well, we've got lots of stuff on site in terms of new podcasts in development. I think we've got 22 new podcasts on slate for development through the back end of this year. We don't have long left of our year, but certainly through 18, we'll be building out more and more and more of our own IP and our own podcast product. We're talking and working with, you know, a whole host of brands now who now want to make their own podcast where, you know, the brand itself is kind of secondary to what the content is, but all of it is being brought and crafted and paid for by the brand. So, you know, in other digital media, you call it native advertising or what have you. You know, ours is sponsored and in association directly one-to-one with big name brands that everybody listening to this would have heard of. And you'll see those rolling out through 2018.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find it getting harder to sort of, if you see a good podcast, are you still in the business of trying to sort of poach good podcasts for, you know, for Audioboom?
I wouldn't say we poach them as such. I mean, you know, all of the podcasts, you know, there are many smaller but high quality podcasts, and, you know, one or two of those out of every 50 or 100 bubbles up to become, you know, a bigger thing that is commercially viable for us to take to agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of podcasts in the UK are recognizing that we are the honest players in this marketplace. We give them honest appraisals of what they can make in terms of revenue. Again, we've seen other companies come in and promise the earth. And actually, one company here has promised the earth. It's run adverts against a whole host of different podcasts. And then it's not even paying the podcasters. because it's saying their cost of production has been too high. At the end of the day, that's bullshit. You can't do that. You know, if people have run adverts, they should get paid for them. Hey, we even paid Tom Winifred. That's how honest and clean we are.
Okay, so which cut? No, better not.
That's until we removed him from our platform, obviously, for his vile and obscene language, but that's a different matter.
Yeah, okay. But coming towards the end of the year now, so the end of the year is November for you, isn't it? End of November 30th, I think. So you're happy with the figures, yeah?
Things are good. We're trading hard. I mean, we still have work to do through Q4. But, you know, at this stage in Q3, versus where we are at this stage in Q4, we are ahead of, you know, to budget where we were in Q3 at this stage. So, you know, we've got, you know, four and a bit, nearly 5 weeks left of the quarter. Mm-hmm. We have to sell and deliver through the rest of these five. But, no, it's good, you know, that our progression quarter on quarter, I mean, it's there for everybody to see. We put the numbers out. And everybody is acutely focused in this business around the Q4 delivery against what we put out in the market. So it's good, and everybody's working hard to make sure that we keep hitting the numbers and also controlling costs. You know, we are, you know, despite what's been written, again, by Mr. Winifred and other people, yes, Ollie's come and joined us on sales. Mm-hmm. How rash of me to employ somebody that makes revenue. But our overall headcount here in the UK continues to be reduced as we add more headcount into the US. So we've got really great cost control across the whole business.
Okay. All right, Rob. Well, if anyone's listening to this right now and they know that podcasts are getting very popular because they're listening to the podcast maybe for the first time ever, and they're thinking, yes, it's an exposure to a podcaster is a good thing, but they're not yet following you, on Vox Markets. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
I think ultimately we are outperforming our market in a market that is the fastest growing sector within digital media globally right now. I think that's unarguable, the rise of on-demand and audio, and we are performing better in our market than pretty much any other company. Layered into that, as I've just mentioned, you know, our cost control is absolutely on point. But I think more importantly, you know, again, as with all emerging markets, you know, it's taken us a while to find, if you like, that perfect repeatable revenue model around commercialization and how that works. We've hit our straps on that over the last three quarters. We now have a model and a mechanism that we can cookie cutter and roll out around podcast acquisition, commercialization, and creation that we know through 18 and 19 is going to be a winner. And I guess the third piece is, you know, ultimately this market will live and die by the quality of the data and the metrics that are delivered to the media agencies, because ultimately they hold the purse strings to all of our revenues. And I know at the company, we are doing a bang-up job against IAB standard. We're working with iTunes on revising their new podcast measurement techniques, working with the likes of Spotify and Deezer and Google on, you know, how do we get a uniformed approach to metrics across all of these different consumption portals that we can report back to the agencies. And, you know, because we are pretty much the only player that is working with everyone, we're in the best position to come up with that industry standard around the metric, and the agency trusts what we give them.
Excellent stuff, Rob. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dennis Thomas, CEO, and Richard Wilkins, CFO of Phoenix Global Mining. That's PGM ticker. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Yes, nice to hear from you, Justin.
Yeah, well, I've heard from you before, Dennis. It's nice to chat to you again, but I've never heard from Richard before. And I suppose I'll leave it up to you, Richard. For people listening right now who are not sort of familiar with the story of Phoenix Global Mining, can you give us a brief summary as to what you're all about there, please?
Yes, of course, Justin. Well, we are developing the historic Empire Copper Mine in Idaho in the USA. We have the prospect of near-term production from a simple open-pit SXEW operation, and we have the upside potential of a massive underground project sitting below it. Everything is going on track on site. We're very excited about it, and we have recently announced that we've also acquired cobalt property in the Idaho Cobalt Belt, which is just north of the Empire Mine, and we're very excited about that as well. And Idaho is a fantastic place to be, fantastic infrastructure, and we couldn't have better support from the local community.
Yeah, well, let's go into this. Two bits of news. You've got Empire, and like I say, you've got the cobalt and, you know, properties in Idaho as well. So what do you want to start with? What should we look at the progress on Empire first and then go to the new news?
Yes, indeed. I'm very pleased to say we're working towards completion of a pre-feasibility study in April 2018. And we've appointed the contractors and the consultants. Everything is in very good shape indeed. I'm also pleased to say that we announced that we were doing, after we IPO'd, a 28-hole drill program, which was basically an infill drilling program with the resource that we declared at the time. And I'm very pleased to say that it was completed very successfully. We have only 19 samples left to complete before we are able to announce an upgrade of our resources, which will be both JORC and NI 43-101 compliant. So we're looking at announcing those, all being well, probably round about the third week of November. So that is that's an exciting development as far as we're concerned. The metallurgical test work is going well, and the also, we're very pleased to announce that the first of our holes into the underlying sulfide that Richard talked about earlier on has been completed. Stopped at 1,030 feet deep into the structure of the sulfide, and the samples, in fact, at the moment are being split and sent to the laboratory. We'd hope to have an announcement on the results of those samples come December. Now, we're also reopening the 1100 and 700 portals, so we're looking to get access into the ore body, into the sulfide ore body. That is proceeding satisfactorily, and we're undergoing the safety compliance before we can actually enter the underground works. And, of course, apart from that, we're particularly excited that we've finally been able to announce the acquisition of these two claims in the Idaho Cobalt Belt, north of Mackay, approximately 90 miles as the crow flies north of Mackay. Very exciting development, particularly as they're in a much sought-after location. Copper, cobalt, very much the mineral that people are after at the moment. And I'm pleased to say we've had a couple of geologists working on-site. We have mapping and sampling done, and we're hoping to get the results of those in December also, with a view to identifying our drilling sites for the next drilling season.
Yeah, but I must have been, obviously, like I say, it's two highly prospective copper-cobalt properties, but you must have had your hands full with Empire. So what's the decision process behind this, taking on more sort of work here?
Well, interestingly, I mean, one of the things we've been looking for in the Empire ore body, we have copper, we have gold, silver, zinc, and of course, in the sulfides, the last shipment that went from the Empire Mine was a tungsten shipment. We've also been searching the records and our sampling for cobalt actually within that mineral suite, but there isn't cobalt in that. There is tungsten, possibly molybdenum. And quite frankly, if you follow Route 93 north of Mackay, you come into Salmon, and you actually cross the cobalt belt. So it's a relatively short drive and a logical move for us to if you like, continue our search for copper and cobalt in that location.
I think, Justin, given the way cobalt has been going and given the historic cobalt belt, which is right next to us, it would have been somewhat remiss of us not to take advantage of it. There's been a bit of a staking frenzy recently, with Canadian juniors mainly staking that cobalt Idaho belt. And so we felt we should join them. And I'm delighted to say that we've managed to get hold of, well, it's close to 1,200 acres.
Yeah.
Yes.
With between the two properties,
yes,
on the north and the south of that belt, either side of a town called Cobalt.
And also, I might add that we have in-house experience of exploration and the mineralogy particularly of that particular cobalt belt in the two of our senior geologists who really have located these particular claims have actually worked up there, and these are claims that they have had their eye on for some considerable time. So we had to be very relatively secretive going in there and not announcing everything, and we finally were able to 100% claim that we had these leases. So we've been under the radar very much so in that area.
Yeah, well, you're in the right space, aren't you, at the moment with this sort of electric vehicle revolution going on. I mean, cobalt and copper couldn't be more demanded, and especially, I mean, you know, I've chatted to a couple of copper sort of explorers and producers of late, and, you know, it seems like there's no it's no other commodity that can replace copper. And like I said, an average EV uses three times as much, pretty much, on average to a normal car. And like I say, every government in the world pretty much is going towards a non-petrol, non-diesel car. So I just see copper having a very bullish future, don't you?
Timing is everything in life, Justin, as you know. And I must admit that, yes, the announcements that have been made from the Chinese right across the world, in fact, to our own government, have not done us any harm whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I think that's right. I mean, it is, if you like, it is the right project with the right metals in the right place at the right time. It all comes together.
Yeah. So just give us an overview of the timeline here. So you've got, I see on your website, you've got phases here. So phase one, of course, and you're targeting production of how much by when?
7,000 tons of copper 2020. Mm-hmm. That's our initial target from the pit in the oxides. The sulfides will depend very much on what we find, not only from our drilling, but also if we can get access to underground. But that is a much larger undertaking. And that could be has the possibilities of having a considerable tonnage with it. And with the cobalt, we're drilling program next year, and it will literally depend on what we find. But to be perfectly honest, given the economics of cobalt at the moment, I'm optimistic that we'll be looking at an interesting situation this time next year, as far as the cobalt's concerned.
Yeah, okay, guys. Well, if anyone's listening right now and they're thinking, yes, listen, I need another copper sort of play on my watch list, because I think it's the copper market is going to, you know, this EV is going to revolutionise, I think, supply demand here. But if they're listening right now, they're not following you, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Well, because we are in the right metals, Justin, copper and cobalt, and we're in an excellent jurisdiction. I don't think you can get better than Idaho, USA, so we don't have political or risk such as that. And finally, we've got a very exciting work program which is moving ahead at pace, and so the news flow is going to keep coming, and it should be news flow that frankly should add considerable value to the company.
Guys, very nice to chat to you, and like you've got a busy program going on there, so no doubt we'll chat in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You're right, Connor.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, time to look at some of the companies reporting this week. So what should we start with, Connor?
Ryanair on Tuesday. Obviously, Ryanair's been in the news quite a lot recently.
Yeah, they've had a bit of press, haven't they? A bit of press coverage in the last
while. All of the wrong reasons. I don't think you could imagine you know, a worse reaction from a company and CEO to a major issue than sort of how Michael O'Leary dealt with sort of the mass cancellations they saw in that 6-week period over September and October. And obviously that has eaten into its stock price. I think it's now at 6-month lows, gradually falling.
Do you know what I'm surprised at? How many flights they actually run and how profitable they are? Because when they say they're cancelling, yeah. I can't remember how many it was, like 40,000.
I think it was like 2,100. I think affected maybe, you know, 40,000 customers. But I think the flights, I think it was like 2,100 out of maybe 100,000 flights, if I'm remembering correctly.
And I thought, wow, I couldn't believe how many flights. So they were saying that this is only like 5% of the company. I thought, really? That's an amazing amount of flights they did run. So I was really surprised. But also, Michael O'Leary came on, first of all, he was almost quite apologetic And then it's almost like it doesn't suit him. And then he couldn't be apologetic. and then he still criticised, you know, his pilots, saying it's not a hard job.
Yeah, he goes, give you good... and bolshier as the issue went on.
It was almost like this PR department, you know, I can imagine being there at that press conference and they were nodding and smiling happily first couple of minutes, and all of a sudden he started turning on the pilots and going, oh no, what is he doing? Because that was the issue, wasn't it? It seems like people are leaving Ryanair, and also they haven't got enough people to cover holidays, and they move the holidays around. And it turns out they're leaving Ryanair because, compared to other airlines, apparently, they aren't as well paid. But he said, you're still well paid, you're still looked after, what's wrong with you? You know, stop messing around, you're hardly going down a pit. Let me have a look at the chart here. So what's going on with the story here, Connor?
Well, yeah, it's figures themselves. You know, if you sort of go back a bit before the issues began, like it's figures themselves. Say, like, it's full year figures in May, very, very, very strong. Like a 6% increase in pre-tax profit to I think €1.3 billion. Revenue is up 2% to €6.6 billion, and that's despite them cutting fares 13%. And during that 12-month period, it also grew passenger numbers 13%, which is impressive given the sort of the difficult trading conditions that sort of plagued the travel sector over that 12-month period. Obviously, that period covered Brexit, which obviously my theory was an ardent Remainer. Mm-hmm. You had the terror attacks around Europe, various things driving people away from sort of short haul travel. But you know, Ryanair, it's you know, I can't remember the last time I flew abroad and it wasn't on Ryanair, just because I'm always going for the cheapest flight, and Ryanair does tend to be the cheapest. The fact that, like you said, the fact that they still managed to be incredibly profitable, like I think first quarter figures in July, it saw a 55% surge in pre-tax profit to €397 million for the quarter, which is remarkable. Mm-hmm. Interesting, it sort of began in July, really, not September, because despite that huge surge in pre-tax profit, O'Leary was a bit, you know, wary over Brexit and the impact that's going to have. And it said it was cutting fares by another 5% over the summer, which I don't think investors were too happy about. And that sort of, it started to dip then, and then obviously it accelerated. And in September and October, and now, as I mentioned, leaving at 6 month lows. I really think on Tuesday, the reaction to the stock is going to be dependent on whether the company releases a figure to do with how much these cancellations have cost, and then what that figure is. I've seen various figures. I think I saw one figure saying it could be €25 million, but then I saw another one saying its impact on full year profit could be €80 million to €100 million. So it really depends on the size of that of that figure, I think, is what was going to be the headline story on Tuesday, and whether it recovers a chunk of its recent losses or whether it, you know, falls even further.
Yeah, I just think, you know, they're in a hugely strong position, and this in my mind is a temporary blip, you know. And so if you're an investor here and you've done your research, I think you know maybe on this dip here, obviously wait for a recovery, but it's an opportunity to buy more, you know. And that's not an investment advice, but if they are, apart from what's happened, if they are still as strong, and I assume they are, because like I said, you haven't shut any positions down. They're still a dominant, you know, player in the European market. So I just think this is a kind of weakness you buy into, you know. Anyway, anything else? Look at Connor.
Yep. Next, we've got Next on Wednesday, as in the company Next, as well as it being the next company. It's had a bit of a bonkers year, really, in terms of its market performance. Like, it plunged in January off of a weak set of Christmas figures. Eventually hit. It saw like a bit of a recovery in May, but then hit like sub £36 lows in July. It was really, really looking rocky. You know, fair enough. The retail sector has not been great this year. Then since then, it's I think it's from its mid-July lows, it's risen 35.5% in the last, what was that make it, 3 months or so?
Yeah.
Which is, it's ridiculous. Not really on anything that great. Like its second quarter figures in August, jumped 10% in a single session, despite posting 2.2% fall in total sales. I think investors instead focused on, there was a 0.7% rise in full price sales, which had been a bit of an issue recently. And there was a very minor adjustment to the company's annual sales forecast, with the lowest end of sort of the estimates rising from a 3.5% fall to a 3% fall. Mm-hmm. Then cut to September's half-year figures. Again, the half-year figures themselves, pretty awful. Pre-tax profit plunged 9.5%, which was the steepest decline since the height of the recession. Total sales were down 2.2%. That broke down as an 8.3% dive in its retail sales, you know, so largely the high street sector. But a 5.7% increase in the directory business, which is consistently where Next strengths lie. However, again, Lord Wolfson, who tends to be a bit bearish about the stock, said he was more confident in the company's outlook going forwards. And there was another revision to its full year sales forecast. Mm-hmm. So instead, I think the original range after that Q2 figures in August was between -3% and a rise of 0.5%. Now that stands after the half year things at a fall of 2% or a rise of 1.5%. So that was a fairly sizable revision to its full year forecast. Now, obviously, on Wednesday with its third quarter figures, it really needs to deliver signs that it is going to achieve that. So it really needs those third quarter sales figures to bear out that, you know, increased optimism.
Yeah, well, talk about being you're right there about Lord Wolfson, though, because talk about bear out. He was, I mean, I remember them having a couple of updates that were really bearish, you know, about, you know, they're basically, first of all, they got the fashion wrong. They said they were trying to be too trendy. And then they said, you know, this is going to have a lot of headwinds. And they said something, didn't they? They did say they're going to have some of the worst sales of all. And then, you know, I think they really did air towards the side, to the lower end of guidance. They really did, was that, and then when the figures came out, it wasn't that bad. So it's almost like a relief rally. I don't know. And I think sometimes that's quite a good way to, I mean, in the short term, you're going to get a hammering from investors because you're guiding the stock down. But when you actually release and it beats, you know, your previous guidance or bearish guidance, albeit, you know, then it rallies strongly, doesn't it? You know, rather than, and you're thinking, it's one of the things, you know, it's better to, you know, over-deliver, you know, under-promise, over-deliver. And that's what they've sort of done, haven't they, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think it'll be interesting to see on Wednesday whether they can actually then deliver a decent set of third quarter figures. But just based on how bad the retail sales figures have been in the UK in the last couple of weeks. I think, was it last week you had that really sharp fall in September retail sales, and then the CBI figures yesterday, mm-hmm, said that there was a drop in sales in October that was the worst since, I think, March 2009. So the retail sector is looking pretty horrible at the moment in the UK. So it'll be interesting to see whether that then affects Next figures and whether they do have to do another revision or whether they can actually sort of beat the rest of the sector.
Yeah, cool. Okay, yeah, I'm not particularly bullish. I mean, I think they're oversold completely, but I'm not particularly bullish in the sector they're in. It's very competitive, isn't it? And I think Next now, even though it's been a dominant player for years, it's starting to, you know, lose that dominance a bit. All right, so what are we next looking at then, Connor?
Yeah, ending on Apple on Thursday. I couldn't resist. Obviously, it's a huge favourite of our clients.
Did you see last week? I mean, did you see the results from Amazon and who is it? Google. I mean, do you know what? Phenomenal amount of revenue, especially Amazon.
Amazon's
like 47. Let me just where was it by? Let me just scroll down here and find this. They did $43.7 billion in that quarter, in the third quarter, I think it was, wasn't it? So, and that's nearly the size of Slovenia's economy last year. That's one quarter. I mean, they're not big on profits, so they reinvest a lot of it, but they're trying to buy up, you know, the entire. But someone said now they account for like 43% of all online commerce, which is phenomenal in the world. That's unbelievable. And I mean, they're going to surely run into issues on this level sooner or later, just the amount of dominance and trust, you know. And I mean, because they're not running a sort of a business here. They're just running a world takeover campaign, aren't they? They're just trying to take over everything.
It's sort of a parody of what like a really hacky satire would write about, you know, Globocorp or whatever. Amazon is basically that.
Yeah, it's nuts. Anyway, so we're looking at Apple. How are they doing?
Yeah, well, the first five months of the year, it was sort of business as usual. It rocketed higher, and since then, it's still continued to climb. But there've been a bit more issue, a few more issues, sort of. So it hasn't been clear saving since around June time. Mm-hmm. Third quarter figures in August, they themselves were strong. I think earnings, EPS came in at $1.67 against $1.57 forecast. Revenue was at $45.4 billion, which was around $500 million higher than expected. And iPhone sales were, I think they were at 41 million units, which was a pretty decent number for what people had. I think they'd expected that quarter to be a bit of a lame duck, just due to it was the quarter before the launch of the iPhone 8. So people were concerned that people would sort of stop buying iPhones basically ahead of sort of the latest upgrade, but that didn't happen. Since then, however, there have been some fairly big questions asked about A, the demand of the iPhone 8, with people speculating that, well, are people just going to wait until the launch of the iPhone X in November? And then with the iPhone X, there's repeated rumors of sort of fairly significant production issues with that phone. And whether that'll affect the guidance for the next few quarters if they can't ship as many as initially expected.
I thought it was limited. I thought the iPhone 8 or iPhone 10 or iPhone X was limited amount, wasn't it? Or is that right? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I know that I definitely know that they're expected to ship a far lower number than normal. Yeah. And from what I've been reading, it suggests that even if it is limited, that figure is going to be below what would be expected of that sale.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they're having technological issues. I think maybe with like face recognition or something. You know, small upgrades they've made that are sort of, you know, delaying them going sort of full blast into production.
Yeah, well, I'm just reading it now, Bunny. It says on Forbes, Apple leak reveals iPhone X launch is a catastrophe, and they're having problems with. So it's not meant to be limited edition, I don't think, but it will be. But
could well drive up sales. You know, all of them will be hoovered up, but in terms of revenue, that, you know, that could cause some issues going forward. I think in terms of fourth quarter revenue, I think Apple itself said it's expected to be between $49 billion and $52 billion, which the midpoint of that would mark an 8% increase year on year. However, I think analysts are a bit more bearish and have said that they think that it'll be at the lower end of estimates, around, I think it was $49.2 billion. Earnings per share, I think it's expected to be 1.87, which is, that's a pretty decent number. I do think, though, that the main focus is going to be on the sales of the iPhone 8 and any update on the production issues of the iPhone X. Also, beyond that, they sort of made an interesting move this week. They hired Jay Hunt, who's the woman that brought Bake Off to Channel 4, which that continues their sort of fairly aggressive hiring process of hiring some pretty big names for their original content. Original content division. So I think investors will be interested to see how much Apple announces on Thursday in regards to that, and how serious they are. You know, the hiring suggests they're fairly serious about taking on Netflix and Amazon and Hulu in the US and companies like that, you know, streaming companies, how intent Apple is on really expanding into that market. Because obviously it's got the financial clout to sort of weather some rough early years. And, you know, if you just put things for free on people that have iPhones, you've got a pretty big initial, you know, viewership for those kinds of, you know, for any kind of content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? In fact, today, on Friday... our recording this on a Friday, is pre-orders are opening. So, and they're expected to be just 2 to 3 million units globally on launch day. And this is compared to record iPhone sales of 13 million last time. So, wow. You say 2 to 3 million up for sale, up for grabs, compared to 13 million is not a lot, is it? So there we are. So we'll see what happens there.
Because it will create a demand for that product.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's very clever, isn't it? Because it's a human psyche. When you can't have something, you want it. And you know, when there's plenty of it around, you don't want it. So I think it's a very clever psychological ploy. I don't think they've done it on purpose, but it'll work in their favour. I think if people can't get hold of it, they want it, don't they?
You know? Yeah.
Anyway, Connor, Thanks for that, fella. Have a nice week.
Thanks very much.
We'll speak next week.
Yeah, talk next week.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Ascent Resources, AST. At four, Altona Energy. Seen this mentioned quite a few times. Don't really know much about the stock. ANR. At three, Echo Energy. That's Echo, ticker. At two, Greatland Gold, GGP. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Rheobold Resources. A lot of people mentioned that as well. RBD. All right. Top five most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours were, at five, Management Resource, easy for me to say, Management Resource Solutions, Mrs., is the ticker there, Exercise of Warrants, and Share Purchase by Director. Also at five, the same amount of likes, is Strategic Minerals, 1.5 million placing with exercise and management options. At four, I'm having problems talking today, Echo Energy, ticker there is Echo. Statement, share price movement and suspension. At three, Highland Natural Resources, HNR, flowback operations commence at East Denver. At two, Greatland Gold. Greatland Gold builds up cash balance of $4 million. And number one, most liked RNS, was also the most disliked RNS as well, was from Ascent Resources. Successful fundraising of $1.5 million via primary bid. And Colin will be on the podcast this week to talk about answering private investor questions. And I put the survey out on Friday, and then they announced they did an RNS for placing, and a lot more questions came in. So I'm collating all those, and I will ask Colin some of those questions, the most popular ones, because there were a lot of duplicates, and I can imagine around the same issue, as you can probably imagine. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.